Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, November 5th, 2019. We will begin today's reading with a front page article entitled Leaving the Field, Atlanta Farmer Harvests Last Crop Ready to Retire by Phyllis Coulter of Illinois Farmer Today. This harvest season will be memorable for a lot of people for various reasons, but especially for Ron Yeast. At age 83, he has decided, like it or not, it's time to retire. With his grain now all pulled from the fields, he's preparing for his final equipment sale on November 25th. "The family has been after me to hang it up," Yeast said, and he finally decided to listen. His most profitable farming years were in 2011 and 12, when the prices were high, helping him pay things off. He even bought the 2011 combine he drove to harvest soybeans planted May 17th. They came up early and never got any height. "The yield won't be what it should be," he said, looking at the combine's monitors. The soybean yield came in at 60 bushels per acre. "We'd like to see it closer to 75 or 80. I was happier with the corn. All in all, I can't complain," he said. Yeast grew up on a farm and majored in agronomy at the University of Illinois, where he graduated in 1958. He worked at Firestone in Bloomington while he and his wife raised four daughters. Always active in agriculture, he started farming full-time in 1978. He had a cattle feedlot and cow herd until about 2002, and at one time farmed 1,350 acres. His brother also farmed and is 3 years younger than me, and he's already retired. None of Yeast's daughters or grandchildren are interested in farming, so he will rent the land next year with the plan already in place. "But this is my crop," he said, looking across the soybean field. When Yeast retires, his hired man, Richard Bicknell, will retire as well. "I've worked for this family since I was a kid," Bicknell said. His full-time career was as a teacher, but he always made time to work on the farm. Yeast, speaking to young farmers, said it's a good idea to get at least 10 years of experience working on the farm before going into it full time. "It takes time to learn things like how to sell grain," he said, "and it's a good idea to have an off-farm job that pays health insurance." As he finished one field before heading to the next, he considered what retirement will mean. "It's going to be a big change in my life. We'll see what else I can do." The next article is about property tax. Normal Council, Keep Levy Flat, Pension Funding Plan Scaled Back by Derek Bai. Normal may not increase property taxes for residents after all. The Normal City Council instructed the town staff Monday to not only pass up increasing the town's tax levy to pay pension costs, as staff recommended, but also to find an additional savings of almost $100,000 to keep the levy the same as last year's. "We're telling everybody in Normal, the town of Normal is not going to be taking any more money from you," said council member Stan Nord. "It is really not that much money in a budget of $100 million. The staff suggested the council increase its levy by about $640,000 to pay into the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund and its police and fire pension funds, but council members opted instead to reduce how much money the town is putting into police and fire pensions, from reaching 100% of town obligations funded by 2040 to 90%, the state mandated minimum. "I'm pretty ardent about the 100%. Things happen," said council member Kevin McCarthy, noting the proposed increase was in part due to a change in investment expectations for IMRF and that a state pension consolidation bill could change the figures. "I'm willing to pause for a year to see what the state of Illinois does." Mayor Chris Koos and council member Kathleen Lawrence suggested the town make that change and slightly decrease its projected tax rate from $1.47 to $1.4465 per $100 in equalized assessed value. Nord went one step further, pushing the town also to keep the levy flat and reject $96,000 in new revenue that resulted from having a similar rate and getting extra revenue from increases in EAV across the town. "We're so close. I would love to see in the news that we lowered our taxes," said Nord. "That's probably not going to be common in Illinois. We can use that as a marketing tool." Scott Preston moved Nord's suggestion, and it passed with votes from them, Lawrence and Karen Smith. Mayor Chris Koos, Chamberlain Cummings, and McCarthy voted no. After that, the city council voted unanimously to lower its pension funding expectations to 90%. City Manager Pam Reese acknowledged that move will make it more difficult to return to 100% funding later because the town will lose not only the additional money, but also on investment returns from it. She's hopeful, however, the state legislature will move the 2040 deadline. "I don't see this, and I think other council members are the same, as a long-term solution," said Koos. He noted, however, that the state's pension consolidation bill will put some downward pressure on our pension obligations going forward. Reese said the town may need to make several small cuts to make up the missing $96,000 because it made some large cuts to cover a budget deficit in 2018. Personnel, for example, are not likely to be cut again. She noted those cuts will need to be sustainable year after year, eliminating some savings proposed by Nord, such as selling town-owned properties. The town staff will present a final levy to the council for approval in December. That levy will go to the county next spring to determine the town's tax rate. In other business, the council appointed Samuel Gray to the Children's Discovery Museum Board and Tejas Johnny to Normal Planning Commission. McCarthy noted the Planning Commission will hold a public hearing at 5 p.m. on Thursday at the fourth floor at Uptown Station on guidelines for cannabis businesses in the town. He encourages concerned residents to attend. The next article is entitled, "Penske Takes Turn to Steer Indy 500. Racing Powerhouse Also Buys IndyCar and Fame Speedway." A little over a decade ago, back in the days of the CART/IRL split in the IndyCar Series ranks, Roger Penske was asked about the Indy 500, perhaps losing a bit of its luster. His reply was firm and to the point. "The Indianapolis 500 is a spectacular event. It's always been a spectacular event, and it will always be a spectacular event," he said. It now will be up to Penske to make sure the iconic race continues as the largest single-day sporting event in the world and maintains its elite status as the greatest spectacle in racing. With a bombshell announcement Monday that caught everyone by surprise, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and its signature event have been purchased from Holman & Company by the Penske Corporation, an organization that started as a small automotive dealership and that over the past five decades has mushroomed into a global business empire with 64,000 plus employees worldwide and more than $32 billion in consolidated revenue. The growth came under the hands-on stewardship of Penske, a racing guy to the bone who started as a pretty fair sports car racer himself before deciding his future was in building a business rather than driving a race car. An integral part of the Penske Corporation for the last 50 years has been fielding racing teams at the major league level. That division has more than held its own in contributing to the company's success with 18 Indianapolis 500 wins and an unparalleled number of IndyCar, NASCAR, and Professional Sports Car Series championships. The crown jewel of it all is now in his hands, with ownership of one of the most iconic sporting facilities in the world. To many in the Pantograph area and across central Illinois, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and Indy 500 are much more than a World Series, Super Bowl, Kentucky Derby bucket list item to be tended to sometime down the road. It is an annual rite of Memorial Day weekend each May. For multitudes in the area, it's a Sunday in front of the TV. For many others, an annual pilgrimage. One who's been attending the 500 each May for nearly three decades is Illinois State football coach Brock Spack. Spack's love affair with the Speedway and IndyCar racing began as a youngster in Rockford when he listened to the radio broadcasts of the event. As an undergraduate football star at Purdue, he began attending practice days at the track during May. He's been a first-turn fixture every year since, including the years he was on the coaching staff at the University of Wyoming. As someone who knows a thing or two about team building and leadership, Spack is also a fan and admirer of Penske. He's obviously a great leader and manager, and I think he's going to grow the sport and be good for the IndyCar series, Spack said. In addition to purchasing the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Penske also bought the NTT IndyCar Series, an entity that's been bucking a downward trend in motorsports by experiencing a growth spurt in recent years. What turned out to be an annual blockbuster Saturday night event here in Illinois at Worldwide Technology Raceway, formerly Gateway Motorsports Park in Madison, has contributed mightily to that growth. Raceway owner and CEO Curtis Francois is welcoming what Penske can bring to the table. Roger Penske and his management team have been tremendous supporters of our efforts to improve our facility and grow motorsports at Worldwide Technology Raceway, Francois said. Our team looks forward to working with Mr. Penske and the entire Penske Entertainment organization as we plan for the future. And this story was written by Bruce Yentis. Turning the page to local and state news, we have an article entitled Waste Collection Event Touted. Report, Numbers Down, Appointments Improved Process by Derek Bai. This fall's McLean County Household Hazardous Waste Collection was down in both attendance and waste disposed of versus 2017, but officials are just fine with that. This was the first HHW event that required residents to register in advance, noted a report from its organizer, the Normal-based Ecology Action Center. The great success of this system, demonstrated by negligible wait times for event participants, should help return participation rates to normal within the next couple of HHW events. The September 7th collection still brought in an estimated 1,680 McLean County residents and 16,242 gallons of household hazardous wastes, items like paint, motor oil, and drain cleaner that must be disposed of carefully but may not be without such an event. This was the smoothest running household hazardous waste event I've seen here or anywhere, said EAC Executive Director Michael Brown. It's great to make it more accessible, easier, more seamless. The EAC runs the event every 2 years with funding from the City of Bloomington, Town of Normal, McLean County Government, and private partners, including Rivian Automotive, which hosted the event at its plant on Normal's west side. The 2017 collection took in 23,717 gallons of waste from 3,022 households. According to a report on the collection, 79 volunteers worked over 300 hours to help the EAC staff set up, work the event, and tear everything back down at the end of the day. The EAC took 1,236 appointments by phone or online. EAC didn't announce the event's location ahead of time, but 14 non-appointment attendees showed up regardless. Previous events were also at Rivian. The most common items collected were flammable liquids, 27.8% of all items, pesticide liquids, 26.4%, and aerosols at 14.9%. The event also took in 17,501 pounds of electronic waste, including 34.4% cathode ray tube or CRT televisions and 6% LCD or plasma televisions. Those items can also be donated at Normal's Public Works office. We have historically included electronics at the hazardous waste events, but in the past we've had various partners help us. They got into it because it was revenue producing, but all that's changed dramatically, said Brown. We did include it at additional cost. This is likely the last year we will include e-waste at the hazardous waste collection. The next article, Teacher Licenses Pulled for Payer, by Kelsey Watznauer. In Pontiac, two Livingston County teachers facing sex-related charges are among Illinois educators whose teaching licenses have been suspended by the state superintendent. James Stockland, the former dean of students and athletic director of Sonnman Elementary School, is accused of two counts of possessing child pornography. Livingston County Sheriff Tony Childress said the victim was a student at the school. Stockland, who worked for the district for more than 25 years, was placed on administrative leave June 18th and arrested on June 19th. He pleaded not guilty to the charges. In July, Superintendent Christopher Meyer said Stockland was placed on leave while the district investigated possible inappropriate use of the district's internet and email systems. Kathy Patton, a family and consumer science teacher at Dwight Township High School, is facing a charge of criminal sexual assault by an authority figure. After her arrest on May 31st, Childress said the charges involve an underage male victim who is a student at the high school. Patton pled not guilty to the charge. State Superintendent Carmen Ayala is required to suspend an educator's license if they are charged with a narcotics offense, sex offense, or other criminal offenses as specified by the school code until those criminal charges are adjudicated through the court. Next, Dana Water Storage Tank Overhauled. In Streeter, the town of Dana has a rehabbed water storage tank. Illinois American Water spent about $400,000 to update the 68,000-gallon, 115-foot-tall tank located on Walnut Street. The steel standpipe tank was built over a decade ago. The most recent work included inspection, maintenance, and interior and exterior painting. Illinois American Water used drone technology to oversee the work. John Moore, a licensed drone pilot for Illinois American Water and senior operations supervisor, said drone technology helps reduce cost and increase safety. John Mace, operations supervisor for the Streeter District, which serves Dana, said the tower looks great and will be a beautiful landmark for residents and visitors for years to come, while also serving a vital role in our water distribution system. Illinois American Water is the largest investor-owned water utility in the state, serving about 1.3 million people. Next, we'll read about some local sports. U-High finds path to victory. Pioneers settle in after rough start in sectional triumph, by Randy Scherer. When University High School's volleyball team fell behind 13-9, 2016, and 23-19 in front of a huge, boisterous crowd on Monday, it chose not to make any strategic adjustments because, frankly, it didn't see the need. "I think we just needed to calm down," said senior libero Logan Murray, whose team did just that en route to a 25-23-25-16 victory over Muhammad Seymour in a Class 3A sectional semifinal the Bulldogs hosted. "Muhammad brought a big support system, so I think we just needed to calm down, take a breath, and do our own job." The biggest job was regaining composure, which led to better defense. "Eventually, our defense has to work," said U-High coach Mike Bolhois. "We pay too much attention to it for it not to. We were running out of time, but eventually it kicked in." The top-seeded Pioneers improved to 32-6 and will face fellow Central State 8 conference member Rochester at 31-6 in Wednesday's 6 p.m. final. The Rockets won Monday's first semifinal, 25-18, 25-23, over Champaign St. Thomas More at 35-3. In September, U-High topped Rochester 25-17 and 25-11. "I think we need to try out ball control. I think we need to try to out-ball control them, Bolhuis said of the Rockets. The serve-receive battle is going to be a big one. Getting the ball in our setters' hands so they can run the offense, I think that's going to be critical. They are very offensive. If they do a good job passing, they are going to score. Number 2 seed Mahomet Seymour, which also lost to U-High 25-15 and 25-16 in September, ended the season at 30-8 to tie the school record for wins in a season. We definitely had a game plan that we were following in the first set, said first-year Bulldog coach Stan Bergman, a former Champaign Centennial and Rantoul coach who guided St. Thomas More to Class 2A state trophies the last 2 years, first in 2017 and third in 2018. Being up 22-19 and 23-20, we should have finished. I felt we had the right personnel in the front row to do that. We just didn't spread the middle out to where we could kind of let Ansley Randstad take over a little bit more in the front row. Then, after that, we played U-High's game. It was just really hard trying to catch up to them in the second set playing their game. They're a good team. They've got some great players. The majority of them are playing club year-round, and on our team we had maybe two or three. The 6'2" Randstad finished with 9 kills, while Kayan Garner had 19 assists and Ellie Beach 7 digs. Mohammed Seymour used a 5-0 run to take a 13-9 lead in Game 1. Give credit to them, Bullhaus said. They came out and did what we try to do all the time. They ball controlled well. Their setters made great decisions and they were hitting the ball. They've got the most intimidating crowd we've seen this year. U-High asserted itself with a 6-0 run to end Game 1. That flurry began with a dump kill by Winthrop recruit Isabel Schaffbauer, who also had 10 assists to match Eastern Michigan recruit Kendall Burke. That game ended with back-to-back blocks by 6'3" Macy Wellborn and a kill by 6'2" Boston College recruit Alanya Crabtree. Wellborn finished with 3 blocks. In Game 2, the Pioneers bolted to a 5-1 lead and watched the Bulldogs rally within 9-8 and 14-12. At that point, U-High hit the gas with a 10-4 match-ending flurry. I think our hitters stepped up when they needed to, said Bullhouse, who got 6 kills from Crabtree and 6 from fiery freshman Lily Berry. Murray had 7 digs. She's been rock solid all year, Bullhouse said. Her serve-receive stats are phenomenal. If she doesn't dig it, she's in the right spot always, making sure she's getting a touch. Next, the Redbirds look to make their points. ISU women carry faster pace into season opener. This is by Randy Reinhart. The offensive firepower exhibited in Illinois State's 89-point outburst in last week's exhibition win over Lindenwood excites Redbird women's basketball coach Kristen Gillespie. We have a different makeup of our team. We have quite a few different weapons and we can score in different ways, said Gillespie, whose team opens its regular season Tuesday at 7 p.m. against Truman State at Redbird Arena. With our pace, we have a chance to score a few more points. We're not as deliberate as we have been in the past 2 years. ISU originally had a Division I opponent scheduled for its opener, but that team backed out. A team had a coaching change and dropped us, Gillespie said. We were in a scramble situation, so we were really lucky to pick this one up. Like Lindenwood, Truman State is a member of the Division II Great Lakes Valley Conference. Lindenwood was forecast for 5th in the 16-team league's preseason poll, while Truman State was tied for 6th. Truman is a really good program, back to when I was in the GLVC at Lewis, said Gillespie. They have a great culture. Their kids are going to play extremely hard. They run a motion offense similar to Lindenwood. ISU will start T.T. Maggot and Mary Crompton at the guards with Lexi Wallen and Megan Talbot inside. The 5th starter will be either Kyle Newland or Juju Redmond. We're putting a great premium on what happens in practice. Practices are so much more competitive, Gillespie said. More kids will play this year than in the past. We don't want to get caught up in who is starting. Everybody will have to contribute to become the team we want to become. Truman State was an NCAA tournament team last season and posted a 23-8 record. The Bulldogs dropped an exhibition to Missouri at 94-55. Sloan Tota, a 5'9" senior, is Truman's top returning scorer at 11.4 points. Other top Bulldogs players include 5'8" freshman Hannah Belanger, 6'1" sophomore Maddie Ray, and 6'2" junior Katsi Jasikas. Bloomington High School graduate Ellie Weltha has joined the Bulldog roster this season as a redshirt freshman. Maya Wong, who graduated early from Normal Community to enroll at ISU and join Gillespie's roster, played 7 minutes in the Lindenwood exhibition and produced 2 points and 1 rebound. Gillespie plans to redshirt Wong, so she is unlikely to play again this season. "It was fun. I don't take it for granted," Wong said. "I know I get to sit and watch them play the whole year, which is going to be awesome. They're so much fun to watch." Wong will practice with the Redbirds in what would have been her senior season at NCHS. "It's going to be hard to sit out, but it's going to be really good for me and the rest of the team," said Wong. "Every day I get to play against TT and Paige Saylor in practice. They're the toughest you can get. I'm learning from them and getting used to what I'm supposed to do and where I'm supposed to be." Next, the Titans get an early test at Southern Illinois by Randy Reinhardt. For the second straight season, the Illinois Wesleyan basketball team will stretch its legs and test its mettle against a Division I opponent in a season-opening exhibition. "Anytime you can get a Division I exhibition game, we're going to try to do it," IWU coach Ron Rose said. "It creates excitement and it's a motivator for our guys to make sure in the off-season we are preparing at our highest level." The Division III Titans face Division I Southern Illinois on Tuesday at a 7 p.m. game at the Banterra Center in Carbondale. The game serves as an exhibition for Wesleyan, while the Salukis will count the contest on its record. "This is a great opportunity," said Rose, whose team lost to Illinois-Chicago 81-60 and Illinois 83-67 on back-to-back nights last November. "We're always looking for a big-time experiences for our team and our program." IWU will start Grant Wolf and Keandre Schumacher at the guards, with Peter Lambesis and Doug Wallen at the forwards and Charlie Bear in the post. The top reserves in the backcourt are Corey Noe and Luke Yoder, with Alex O'Neill and Cody Mitchell coming off the bench for inside duty. "I think we're going to be a really balanced team," said Lambesis, a 6'4 sophomore. "We're going to get out more in transition this year. We lost a lot from last season, but we still have a lot back." Southern, a Missouri Valley Conference rival of Illinois State, defeated Division II Minnesota State 56-41 in an earlier exhibition. Freshman Marcus Dalmask and senior Eric McGill placed SIU within 17 points each in that game. "I was really pleased with our guys' effort for 40 minutes," said first-year Salukis coach Brian Mullins. "In terms of defensive intensity and focus over 40 minutes, I didn't think there were many breakdowns." Southern returns just 4 players from last season's team and was picked last in the MVC preseason poll. 2 Saluki returners, McGill and Aaron Cook, form an experienced backcourt. "Southern Illinois is going to be very good," said Rose. "Our goal is to go in there and play well. We want to perform at a high level and give ourselves a chance to win. You're doing your team a disservice if that's not how you approach it." Former ISU guard Tony Willis is a graduate assistant for SIU. IWU opens its regular season at home November 12th against Blackburn. That concludes our first section for the Pantograph on Tuesday, November 5th, 2019. We will return in a few minutes for the second half and begin with reading the death notices. Thank you.